Trimester Podcast by Fourth Trimester Bodies Project. I'm Ash Luna.
And this is Flowers Luna, and May is Maternal Mental Health Month. We're going to be talking about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. They are the number one complication of pregnancy and childbirth. Women of every age, culture, income level, race can develop perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. They're caused by changes in biology, physiology, your environment, expectations.
So I think it's important to pause here and say that we are just humans having a conversation about this. We're not mental health professionals. We've done a little bit of research. We've had some personal experience and some project-based experience. But if you are in crisis or need help or need more facts about this, we'll include some links and resources in the show notes. We just want to be transparent that we are not professionals ourselves, just two people having a chat about
it. With that said, even with like all the articles that I've read and the research that I've done, it appears that maternal mental health should not be that difficult to try and support someone through. It seems like it should be part of the process. It should be routine to support someone if they are experiencing some sort of prenatal mood or anxiety disorder. So even though we're saying we're not experts, we're not therapists, we're not professionals, it's not something that is impossible.
Absolutely. It's something that affects 1 in 7 pregnant birthing people. And so I think just that fact alone means that it's something that's prevalent, something that we can and we should be talking about, you know, whether we're professionals or not. So we're going to do our best with this, be as sensitive as possible, but also be as open as possible as well.
So where and when can these disorders happen? It sounds like maybe they can be pinpointed somewhere. It sounds like they're all over the place. Is this...
Yeah, so that's the thing. They can happen to anybody at any time, really. The research does show that the affect during pregnancy is a little bit less common than the prevalence of these things postpartum. Part of that could be the shift in hormones, support, all of the changes that your body goes through, you know, towards the end of pregnancy and once you have given birth.
So Ash, I know that Fourth Try recently did a survey online asking people about maternal mental health. Can you share a little bit about those numbers that you got?
Yeah, so it was pretty shocking. I'll say not surprising, but shocking at the same time. I just put some polls up in our Instagram stories on the Fourth Try Bodies account. And those are live for about 24 hours. And in that time, 800 people responded. My first question was, has your mental health been affected by conception, pregnancy, birth, or postpartum? And 92% of the people that answered that question said, yes, it had been. I intentionally left that a little broad because, you know, some people will feel like their mental health has been affected, but they haven't been diagnosed with anything. 53% of those people said that they did not seek treatment, and 68% said that they were not actually diagnosed with a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder, which I think, you know, kind of runs parallel with the research that we'll talk about in a bit as well. And the final question I asked, which I didn't clarify by any timeline, but I simply asked if they were still struggling with their mental health, and 62% said yes, that they were. Again, you know, I don't know if these folks are newly postpartum or have older children, but I was really surprised to see that over half of the people who felt their mental health had been affected were still struggling that and hadn't felt supported through treatment.
I mean, the number is pretty big. That's almost all of the respondents saying they were affected by mental health during or after birth.
Yeah, so it is almost everybody, and I think that really causes me to pause and think about the why, if this is therefore a typical part of pregnancy, right? I think rather than view this even as a disorder, right, as something that is a complication, I think if we start to view our mental health kind of as a holistic part of pregnancy and postpartum and therefore a typical part of pregnancy and postpartum care, we create better screening tools, we create less barriers, we have opportunities to talk about these things and to seek treatment.
We're going to talk a little bit about the mood and anxiety disorders in a little bit. Why is it important to consider the mental health of the person that's pregnant?
Yeah. I mean, I think how can it not be, right? Your mental health, your mental state affects so much of the rest of your physical health. Higher instances of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders that occur during pregnancy can increase the risk of premature birth by a third, which is really shocking. And then our ability to care for ourselves, to care for our children in the postpartum period, you know, if our mental health is not considered, all of those things can diminish. I read a really interesting study put out by Mathematica, which we will link in the show notes as well, but they specifically looked at the societal costs, so actual money figures, of untreated perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So in the study, they looked at births in the year 2017, and they followed mother and child pairs from pregnancy through 5 years postpartum. And they determined that the costs of not treating mental health was $14.2 billion.
And why talk about dollars here? You know, we should just be talking about people's lives and people's health. But we live in a society that says, why is this important? And I mean, if just people yelling out to you, we're humans, you should consider our wellness. Politicians are interested in the numbers. And that is huge when it's something so simple and nobody needs to come in for an extra appointment to talk about how they're doing. It can be a part of the regular check-ins.
Yeah, and I think that that is kind of one of the most frustrating elements of this, right? Is, you know, pregnancy, prenatal and postpartum care, well, perhaps not postpartum care because that's lacking, but prenatal care for most populations is pretty involved. It's pretty invested, particularly if you're planning a hospital birth, if you're working with an OB, you're in the office all the time. And in most cases, as you might remember from our most recent pregnancy, at two of the visits, the nurse came in and took my vitals and then left me with a sheet of paper asking me how I was doing mentally. And she left the room and left me there with a pencil. And, you know, I checked off the boxes that I felt gave the best answers about how I was feeling. But also sometimes you're answering those surveys and you're thinking about what people want to hear rather than being honest, because there's concerns that come with being honest in those spaces. And in my case, you know, I don't think I had a lot of risk factors. I don't think that during this pregnancy, my mental health did struggle or, you know, I was affected by any mood or anxiety disorders. But nobody ever followed up with me on those. You know, the piece of paper went in my file. The midwife never checked in about it. And that was it. So, you know, these screenings are happening, but they're not adequate. They're not involved enough. And I think there's a lot of barriers in place. I mentioned earlier that 1 in 7 people are diagnosed with postpartum mood and anxiety disorders, but it's really important to note that in most cases that number is self-reported, or those are people that have actually been diagnosed, right? So people who have sought treatment. Our survey showed that, you know, more than half of the people who were struggling never went to the doctor. So I worry that those numbers are actually much higher than what we're seeing in this research.
Maternal mental health disorders are treatable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Effective interventions can be delivered by a well-trained non-specialist provider, a community health worker, midwives, doulas, birthing center that will hold a class and talk to you about how you're doing. It didn't happen a lot, and I'm not sure how effective it was, but one thing I really appreciated, we had a group of midwives, but there was one in particular that didn't come into the room and start working on her computer or fiddling with her gadgets. She sat down and she looked at you in the eye and at both of us and just asked how you were doing emotionally. And we didn't get to see her every time, but when we did, it was always reassuring to just know that someone was checking in, because they probably couldn't see what was happening, so they had to just ask a couple of questions. And I'm sure she asked some questions that, you know, made her feel like, okay, this person's doing okay.
Yeah.
Let's now move on to the rest of the appointment. Let's now move on to the ultrasound, you know, all that. And that's all it took, you know, to kind of feel like, okay, someone's checking in on us. Someone's checking in on you during this.
I think that's really important to note, because, you know, in contrast to that screening sheet that I mentioned, those questions never felt like screening to me. And in fact, until you mentioned it, I don't think that I recalled those feeling important, but definitely was. It was somebody just kind of checking in. It felt like a conversation. It felt authentic. But I'm sure in her mind somewhere, you know, that was part of the visit and that was part of her checking in. So I think that authentic support can really, really go a long way.
And all that, those questions, those check-ins can be totally integrated into just general healthcare, including like your health, talking about, you know, women's health, maternal and child health care, talking about reproductive health care and other relevant services. It's not anything additional that has to come up.
Absolutely. So I want to mention here, because we talked a lot about how simple this care can be and how it doesn't have to come from specialists. And that is very true and very valid and very important. And I think we need to create more systems and circles of support where we can access those things. But I also want to say that sometimes medication is needed, medication is effective, and there's absolutely no shame or no stigma into turning to medication as a tool to help yourself feel better. In the work that I do take a front row seat to folks, you know, commenting on the stigma and the shame that can come from taking medications. And there's still a lot of misinformation out there. People will stop taking meds that they would otherwise take to help with their mental health in pregnancy and go off of them cold turkey, and that can create a lot of problems. There are meds that are safe to take all throughout pregnancy. There are meds that are safe to take during breastfeeding as well. And sometimes even our providers are not informed. So it's really important to do research yourself to really see what's out there. LactMed is a really good resource that healthcare professionals can use. And there's some other, you know, layman resources out there that you can come across just by Googling meds and Googling other experiences. But, you know, while support out there does not need to be specialized in many cases, there's some that it does, but there shouldn't be any additional barriers or stigma surrounding that either.
Ash, can we talk about the perinatal mood and anxiety disorders that are encompassed in maternal mental health?
Absolutely. So we're going to get a little cerebral here. There's a lot of numbers and a lot of descriptions of what these are, but I think it's really important to identify them and to talk about how prevalent they actually are. Something else important to note is these aren't one-size-fits-all diagnoses, so they look different in different people. Some people might experience them differently. So as we mentioned earlier, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders can start in pregnancy. So 15 to 21% of pregnant people do experience the onset of depression and anxiety in pregnancy. And I don't have a number for this, but it's also important to note that, you know, people who experience depression and anxiety in their typical life, that very often carries over into pregnancy as well. The most common perinatal mood disorder that I think we hear about is postpartum depression. I think that's what people think of when we talk about maternal mental health, and that definitely is something that is important to talk about, but there's also so many other presentations. So postpartum depression itself affects 21% of people following childbirth. Low-income women and teens have rates up to 60%, which is huge and really causes us to consider what barriers and, you know, what experiences folks in those populations are having that causes those numbers to increase. Postpartum depression can present as feelings of anger, fear or guilt, lack of interest in the baby, appetite and sleep disturbances, difficulty concentrating, and thoughts of harming oneself or the baby. Perinatal panic disorder is a form of anxiety that occurs in up to 11% of new mothers. Symptoms of that include feeling nervous, recurring panic attacks, heart palpitations, something that I had never encountered or heard of until I had a project participant who candidly shared her story, was perinatal OCD. And part of that is because it is one of the most misunderstood and misdiagnosed of the perinatal mood disorders. It is estimated that as many as 11% of new mothers will experience the following symptoms, which are obsessions, persistent thoughts, and intrusive mental images related to the baby, compulsions, doing things over and over again to reduce fears, avoidance, and kind of an overwhelming sense of horror. These are bizarre thoughts, and typically parents are unlikely to actually act on these things, but they cause a lot of anxiety.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
Sure.
We are not even halfway through the list of the mood and anxiety disorders that someone could be going through, but out of those three that you just talked about, I'm thinking about how this affects someone who's going through these mood and anxiety disorders is expected to care for themselves in postpartum situations, care for their baby, and throughout all of that, not be expected to talk about or consider their own health. Can you, by your own personal experience, talk about like what postpartum has looked like for you and what those check-ins looked like for you? Have you had anybody, I mean, I'd like to consider myself someone who has asked you how you're doing, and has anybody else gone and asked you how you're doing after having a baby?
Yeah, not frequently enough. I will say, you know, with Soul, with our newest babe, I was definitely the most supported, both by our, you know, birth care team, by you, by our external network of support. I probably had more people asking how I was doing than in previous pregnancies. And that definitely helps. But as you said, it is a lot. You're caring for a new human, your body is healing, and in many cases you're still expected to just jump right back into your typical life, which can really throw things off. And there aren't a lot of check-ins. My previous pregnancies, I had more complications and premature deliveries and hospitalizations, which definitely increased both my risk of having, you know, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, and my experience was much different, because in those cases you really become invisible, because when your baby's life is at risk or you're in the hospital, baby's in the NICU, you and everybody else are focused on their care. So I would say that in those postpartum periods, I didn't even go to a 6-week checkup after that. I would catch one of the attendings who was there for my delivery in the halls from the NICU and kind of do a quick 2-second verbal public check-in on how I was. But there was really no consistency in follow-up care there for my physical health, but more especially for my mental health.
The other mood and anxiety disorders on this list, depression and anxiety in pregnancy, where 15 to 21% of pregnant women experience moderate to severe symptoms of depression and anxiety. There's postpartum post-traumatic stress disorder, where symptoms include traumatic childbirth experiences, with re-experiencing of trauma, avoidance of stimuli associated with these events.
And I'm going to cut in here and say, I think I mentioned this in our first episode, but I think that every NICU parent has a form of PTSD, and it's definitely something that I was diagnosed with and had to navigate, following the birth of my 28-weeker and then following the birth of the twins. And there are real legitimate triggers from sounds to smells, sensations like that. And I would be curious to see a little more statistics on, you know, what birth experiences folks had that do experience postpartum PTSD. What else is on this list?
Perinatal bipolar disorder. Over 70% of women with bipolar disorder who stop medication when pregnant become ill during pregnancy. 22% of depressed postpartum women are suffering from bipolar depression. The other thing on the list is postpartum psychosis. This occurs approximately 1 to 2 of every 1,000 deliveries. The onset is usually sudden, most within the first 4 weeks, with symptoms including delusions, hallucinations, feeling very irritated, hyperactive, decreased need for sleep, and significant mood changes with poor decision making. There's a 5% suicide rate and 4% infanticide rate associated with psychosis, and thus immediate treatment is imperative.
So while postpartum psychosis is the most rare perinatal mood and anxiety disorder, obviously the one that has the potential to be the most tragic, and is often one that is misdiagnosed or So all of these, again, can look really different. But again, I think it's really important to say that they're all diagnosable. They're all things that you can catch, and you can catch early. Early intervention can be really key, and they're all treatable. You know, some aspects of mental health are ongoing. They're things that we will continue to navigate that might, you know, pop up and then wane at different times. The healing process isn't always linear, but treatment is available. But even though they're so common, they're so undertreated. One of the statistics shows that they are often ineffectively treated or not treated at all. Over half of perinatal women diagnosed with depressive symptoms did not receive any treatment at all.
We talked about the numbers and the studies, and one thing I said as we were getting ready to record this was, if you read one article about maternal mental health and its importance, you've read them all. I read all these articles and all these studies, and they all say the same thing. You know, you might have different statistics and numbers here and there with a tweak, but it all says the same thing. Like, this isn't complicated and difficult. It needs to be a regular part of checking in with people during and after pregnancy. Where are the spaces where this wellness can happen? Where are we able to check in about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders? And how can this look? I mean, I would like to build some sort of beautiful center where this can happen, but I don't think that's necessary. I feel like it just needs to be a regular part of training where when people are going in to get checkups.
I think so. And I think, as we discussed earlier, you know, this can be and should be at a higher level of quality, you know, part of prenatal, typical prenatal care. Absolutely, you know, beyond filling out a little checklist, a better part of postpartum care. You know, right now, most birthing people don't see a doctor or midwife until 6 weeks after they've given birth, which is already way too long for these things to take root and to affect somebody and their ability to exist, let alone care for a new child. We do see that with higher level midwifery-driven care, the incidences of undiagnosed and untreated perinatal mental health and mood disorders goes way down. So I think that you're onto something there, that, you know, making this care a typical part of supports that are already in place can really change things for most people.
And I've said a few times that this should just be easy and a regular part of someone's checkups. But I know that there are many reasons why this might be difficult for someone to consider their maternal mental health or think about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. I know that anyone can develop mental disorders during pregnancy, in the first year after delivery, but poverty, migration, extreme stress, exposure to violence, domestic, sexual, and gender-based violence, emergency, conflict situations, natural disasters, I feel like all of this increases the risk for disorders. And it doesn't stop there.
Yeah, absolutely. We study show that race and ethnicity play a troubling, significant role in people both initiating and continuing treatment. And a lot of that just comes from systemic mistrust of care providers, providers not seeing patients as the humans that they are and not giving enough time to provide adequate care. I also think it's important to note that in addition to racial and cultural bias, trans and gender nonconforming parents struggle with mental health at rates that are much higher than the maternal population. And while, you know, this has been a little bit of a gendered conversation, we've used the word maternal, these statistics do apply to all birthing people, but they do tend to be studied in cisgendered populations more commonly. So what do we do? Obviously, this is a very common problem. As we led off with, this is the number one complication of pregnancy and childbirth. I know personally from the work that I do, ending the shame and the stigma, eliminating barriers for people to access treatment, putting supports in place so that people feel safe saying that they're struggling, can really go a long way. How else do we change this?
Having a higher level of midwifery driven care. I feel like if midwifery is ingrained into the culture of how we care for people, it becomes normal to talk about folks' cognitive behavior and how they're thinking about themselves through and after a pregnancy. Having better social supports and checking in with people to see how things are for them at home or at work. Financial equity, earlier diagnosis, and non-stigmatized treatment. And as you said earlier, medication is okay.
Absolutely. I think all those help. I don't know that I learned. I'm really stunned again about, you know, how common, how prevalent these mood disorders are and how many barriers are still in place. So I hope that some of you listening have learned from this. about how we can support ourselves and one another a little bit better. Check in on one another, ask folks how they're doing, really can go a long way. As I mentioned earlier, I will include some postpartum support resources in our show notes, as well as links to all of the research. And there's quite a bit that we pulled from. Some of it is really, really interesting. And if you find yourself in immediate crisis, one of the best places to reach out to is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And that number is 1-800-273-8255. Hi friends, Ash Luna with a couple of quick tour updates for you. We're heading out on the road again this weekend. In fact, tomorrow morning we leave for LA. On Saturday, we will be hosting a Fourth Tri Bodies After Dark event in Long Beach. On Sunday, May 12th, we have a photo shoot and storytelling gathering at Loom in Los Angeles. And jumping to June, we have a bunch of events in the New York City area. On June 7th, we have a Fourth Tri Bodies After Dark event in Williamsburg at Carriage House Birth. On June 8th, we have a photo shoot and storytelling gathering in the morning at Ancient Light Studios in Brooklyn. And that evening, we'll be shooting at Carriage House Birth again. And the following day, Sunday, June 9th, we will be working with East End Birth Network for a photo shoot and storytelling gathering in Southampton on Long Island. We have a bunch of other cities and stops and events coming up. Please check our website, fourthtribodies.com, for updates. And as always, you can find us anywhere on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, at Fourth Tri Bodies. If you've listened to this episode, please go leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, share, tell your friends. It's the only way that others can hear about us. And as always, I hope you came for the pretty pictures and stay for the movement.